Well, we're in a summer series about the mystery of the modern family, and I've been out in politically incorrect land all summer now, so I'm getting used to the water, I guess. I brought some things from the cupboard today. I have here a mug. This mug gets used every day. If my wife says, "Would you hang this picture up over there?" and I don't feel like going to get the hammer, this works. I've done it before. It gets left in the car. It gets left in the garage. I found it months later on the top of a fence post before. It gets washed in the dishwasher. It gets stored in a cabinet that's got a door that closes it and keeps it in the dark. This cup, very carefully made, this cup. It has an exquisite design, lovely paint and design on it, little pansies. You wash this by hand. It doesn't go in the dishwasher. It represents the high end of our refined behavior, and it's not worn out. It's stored in a hutch with a glass front so that its glory may be seen by whoever comes into the house. Now, both of these vessels are used to drink coffee or tea with, or if it's the granddaughter's having a tea party, then it's a lot of sugar, a little milk, and very little tea, but whatever works. And they are different by design and by nature. They are different. They are involved in different kinds of joy and glory in life. They are both handled differently. And so I think they're a very good illustration of the genders in nature, the masculine and the feminine gender, within which we've been talking about. Within the masculine gender and within the feminine gender, there are wide ranges of psyche, body types, spirit, wide ranges of emotional types and states. There's some crossover. And the way that the genders interact is played out everywhere in our world. I have a female dog and a male dog. And they both act in very different ways. They're clearly gendered beings. This plays out nowhere more intensely than this interaction between the genders. It plays out nowhere more intensely than in a marriage. Marriage is kind of a private world. So last week we looked at some needs that are in a man's body, soul, spirit, and mind. And today we want to look on the woman's side of her whole being, some things that her husband ought to be aware of. So I'll be talking to the guys a little bit more this week. Paul, in his big text on this at Ephesians chapter 5, and you might want to turn there right now because we're going to read this. It's the same place we were last week. Ephesians chapter 5, starting at verse 25. Paul, in talking about this topic, takes it into realms of theology. In other words, it's not just a practical bit of advice. It is that, to be sure. But he's saying this has meaning in bigger places. It is beyond culture. It is a permanent design piece of creation. Ephesians 5, verse 25, and I'm going to read down through the rest of that paragraph. We already talked about the verses before that, but let's start at 25. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word. And so all of us, male and female, are in that process of Christ cleansing the church, making her holy, and washing her with water through the word. We have all been a recipient of the grace of God, him giving us more than we deserve. And so he's saying that husbands ought to do the same toward their wives. Let's press on in verse 27. And to present her, which Christ will present all of us, to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. So he's taking us somewhere, and he's asking husbands to help take their wives somewhere. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds it and cares for it, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. And then he goes back to the same passage that Jesus goes back to when he talks to the Pharisees about marriage. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery. But I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Now, this is the longest passage in the, or longest statement in the New Testament about husbands and wives. Let me define love here. Let me bring us back to a biblical definition of love. Love means putting someone else's interests above my own. It's not necessarily tied to how I feel about a particular person on a particular day. It's just something I choose to do. And so when I'm acting on behalf of someone else's interest, I am, in the biblical definition, I am loving them. So Christ did this for us, and so he asks that we do it for others, and it begins at home with men as Christ for the church, for all of us, so you for your wife. Put her interests ahead of your own. And if that doesn't make sense to you, he says, think of it like you, your own body. You love your body. Oh, I don't love my body. Oh, yes, you do. You put it to bed every night. You sleep. You get up every morning. You feed it. You wash it. You clean it. You dress it. You doctor it. And so with your wife. You may, husbands, may or may not like your wife this week. I don't know how your week's going. It is still your duty to the Lord God to love your wife. It's that simple. He's saying, do for her what I've done for you. I loved you when you were unlovable. I loved you when you didn't deserve to be loved. So you'll do the same for her. And by doing this for her, she has a place to grow up into. Don't press down and hold her down in the place, in the miserable place she might be this week. Create a space for her to grow up into, just like she does for you, by respecting you when you don't deserve to be respected. So let's just talk. I want to talk about just a couple of your wife's needs that are probably there. I'm sure they're there. A lot of these needs between male and female, they get exchanged sometimes, depending on what kind of a person you are. But let me start with this one, the correspondent. We talked a lot last week about respect. And so this is respect that a woman needs. And Peter calls it honor. Paul calls it love. Let me read to you from 1 Peter 3, and you can go there if you want to, but I'm going to read it out of the New American Standard translation because I think they handle it a little better. And this is another one of those passages that's full of alligators, so I'll talk about some of them and I'll let you worry about the rest. He says, you husbands, in the same way, live with your wives, or literally, live with the feminine ones in an understanding way, as with someone or as with a weaker vessel. Like this. Since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. The NIV translate the word honor as respect, and the word honor, I think, is a little bit stronger and I think a better translation. And so if you put that against what he's asked wives to do, the word behind respect is literally fear. It's fear and honor. And it's not fear in the wrong sense, but there's a sense in which we talked about this last week, that the violence in human culture comes out of the male side or the masculine side of humanity. And it's really our biggest growing up project is learning not to be violent. That's the first thing we have to learn as little boys. And so, but that dwells within us. And so there are some things that dwell within the feminine side as well, and it requires honor for her to feel respected and honored. So just as God is asking wives to respect husbands on the days when they really don't deserve respect, he's asking husbands to love wives or honor their wives maybe when they don't deserve it. And that becomes for us a motivation to act worthy of what we receive, to grow up into the image of God, to grow up into Christ. It is a spiritual concept. Treat your husband as a man deserving respect, because both you and God want him to be a man who deserves respect. So create that space for him. Treat your wife as a woman deserving of honor, because God and you, oh husband, that's the person you want her to be. Your first obligation is to God, who treated you far better than you deserved. And that's where this motivation comes from. That's where this request to treat one another better than they deserve is coming from, because that's what we've received. Now, this is not asking us to be a doormat. It's not asking us to deny the reality around us. Adam and Eve would have been a lot better off if Adam had said, you know what? Don't do that. The Lord told us not to eat from that tree, so don't do that. If Abraham had said to Sarah, when she suggested that, why don't you have a child for us with my handmaiden Hagar, if he had said, I don't think that's what God means, I think this is a bad idea, he would have saved a lot of trouble in this world, even to this very day. On the other side of it, if Abigail, she disobeyed her husband. She took food to David. And you know what? She was right to do it, because her husband was being a real idiot. And he was going to get them all killed. Ananias and Sapphira in the book of Acts, they came and they lied about what they had given to the church. It didn't matter to them, the church, how much they gave, but they wanted to be given credit for more than they had really done. And the Holy Spirit ended up taking both of their lives that day. And if she had said to him, let's don't do this, they would have lived longer. Each of those people needed a mate who would say with honor and respect, this is wrong, we shouldn't do this. In the privacy of their world, their marriage world, let's not do this, it's wrong. What a favor it would have been to hear the truth. And so this word in this passage in Peter, that I translated the feminine one, that shows up as the word wives in the translation, is better, I think, the feminine ones. And it's said in relationship to the weaker vessel. And it's describing the nature of the genders. And immediately after it says a weaker vessel, it says that you're both equal inheritors. You're equal beings in God's eyes. You have equal worth, and you're going to inherit the same thing. It means that being feminine is part of the creation order, and it is worthy of honor. It is a gift from God to you who are feminine ones. And the idea of being weaker isn't really super clear in that passage, and so I'm not going to say what it means. It certainly usually means physically weaker. A woman enters into a marriage relationship with trust that her husband will not use his physical size advantage to injure her. There's got to be some trust that way. It also means, in terms of biblical authority, that she has agreed to respect her husband. So she's at a somewhat of a disadvantage in that relationship. And as I mentioned last week, if you are a husband and you think, well, look what I got, you're a fool to think that way. You should be afraid for all the responsibility that's been dumped on you. You've been made responsible, so don't take advantage of that. Don't take advantage of the fact that she's willing to live with you in this relationship. Or maybe something that would come across more clearly, don't be a jerk. Live up to the responsibility that God is giving you in that marriage and family system. Don't make her regret having trusted you. She might be smarter than you. In fact, she probably is. She might be tougher than you inside. And that is a gift that God has given to this one person that you two have become. And you would be a fool as a husband not to take advantage of her cleverness, her toughness. But you need to be in good relationship with her to be able to have that be part of your oneness. As men, most of us learn, when we're learning how to work with our hands at all, that if you force something, very often you end up with a bigger problem than when you started with. Like if you are trying to remove a bolt from an engine block or putting one in, and you break the bolt, you just made yourself crazy. You just tripled your time that it's going to take you to do this job. And so we have something called a torque wrench. A torque wrench is a wrench that once you put a certain amount of pressure on it, it gives way. It won't let you push any harder on that. There's a sense in which God uses the feminine ones and the children in our lives as to teach us those same lessons. They're kind of a torque wrench. Whatever you force in this life, you will pay for. It'll make your situation worse. So we as guys tend to be, we're often tempted just to use our louder voice, our bigger self, to get what we want. Works with brothers,